And good evening, everybody. Welcome to Derek Irvin's As Good As It Gets Basketball Podcast. This is Ricky Hampton, editor and founder of the African American Athlete, and welcoming you in on the start of this Thanksgiving weekend. And, of course, the star of the show, the one and only Mr. Derek Irvin. Derek, happy Thanksgiving to you, brother, man. I hope everything has gone well for you so far during Thanksgiving weekend.
Everything's going great. How you doing, sir?
Man, doing fantastic, man. Just watched a great game between the Detroit Pistons and Houston Rockets. They played back-to-back. They were down in Houston the other night and lost by two. And the Pistons got them here in overtime tonight here in Detroit. So, hey, something to take the sting off the Lions losing again yesterday. We get a win from the Pistons.
Well, so every victory helps. And it's funny because the good thing is we have a former Piston on the show tonight.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You want to tell the audience who we got coming on?
Yeah, first I want to say good evening to everyone. I hope everyone's had a fantastic holiday. Tonight we're going to have this gentleman played in the NBA for 11 years. He's a four-time All-Star, and he's a two-time All-Defensive first-teamer. He's also an All-Defender. He made NBA first. He's the number one guard. Just playing defense, I feel. And he was an All-Defense Player of the Year. So I want to welcome on here Alvin Robertson. How you doing, Al?
Well, Al hadn't called in yet. So
yeah,
we're waiting on Alvin to call. We're waiting on Alvin to call. But until he checks in with us, Derek, just get your thoughts on what do you think's been happening, what's been going on in the league so far. I know the big story has been all the drama in San Francisco with the Warriors and what's happening with Draymond Green and Kevin Durant. but, you know, there's some other stuff going on and some other good basketball being played across the league, too.
Well, Golden State is kind of starting to die down a little bit because you got some of these other teams like the Lakers. I've been playing really, really well. I want to congratulate LeBron again for passing Wilt Chamberlain. Man, that talking about a big feat. That right there, that's monumental. So I want to congratulate him. That's first and foremost. It's been interesting. I've seen a change this year. I really think that right now, if you look at it from top to bottom, I think the Eastern Conference is the best conference. So it's been interesting.
Wow.
Man, it's been crazy. You look at teams like you speak of Detroit. They're better this year. You got teams like Milwaukee. I'm still a big Indiana fan. It's more parity, that's a good thing to see, as opposed to just one team dominating every year.
Well, we'll get into that. But let's go to our guest line because I think the guest of honor is on the other line. Alvin, are you with us? Alvin? Maybe this isn't
Wow.
Okay, we got. Hey, man, we got a whole hour, so we'll find Alvin out. Hey, Derek, could you text me that number again while we're waiting for Alvin and while we're discussing some of the things that's going on? And you know, you talk about the Pistons. I see them most being a Detroiter. I think Dwayne Casey, his impact, Derek, on that roster has them playing at a different level. And tonight, Andre Drummond was just active from the start to the end. He must have had six blocks. Every time Harden tried to drive the lane, I mean, he made him take tough shots. He hit some of them, but he shot a high percentage. Harden finished the game there with 30 points on 27 shots.
Huh.
So he was not his normal efficient self tonight. And, and it ended up in a Pistons victory. But can you talk about the impact that you can get from the coaching level in the NBA? Because like you always say, all these guys are good players. All these guys are accomplished players in the National Basketball Association.
Well, you know, you have guys that always say they play 100%, but they really don't. We have guys, it's just human nature. Sometimes guys slack off. I was looking at when Pistons beat Toronto a few nights ago, and when they won that game, I looked at the end of the game, after the game was over with, and when Dwayne Casey walked out on that court, man, the guys just, like, mobbed him. And when you see that kind of stuff, that I mean, wow, that's what it's about. That's when you know that the players actually care about the coach. It doesn't matter what level of basketball it is, whether it's the middle school, elementary, it doesn't matter. When you see guys play, go out there and respond like that, they'll go over and beyond for the coach. And when you have a team like that, you know, the sky's the limit. That means they're on the right way. And that's good to see that. The Pistons are on their way up. I'm hoping
you know
they
what?
Don't mess it
I,
up.
I saw that. So that's a telltale sign for that team, a good telltale sign. When you see the rapport the coach has with his players, the way they went to him after a big win.
That's a great sign. I mean, if you want practice, you know, that's a long season. And when you play in a long season, you know, guys can get upset, kind of like the Golden State situation. So it's a breath of a fresh air when you see a coach that just, you know, remember he was fired as coach of the year. And then he goes to Detroit and he puts his system, implements his system there. And the guys have obviously bought into it. You know, as the season go on, things change sometime. I'm hoping the Pistons can maintain right where, you know, the way they're playing right now. But to have a positive guy like that in the locker room every day, yeah, that makes the season you know, a lot better. I think it helps, and that usually turns into wins.
Well, man, that is good to see. You're listening to Derek Gervin's As Good As It Gets Basketball podcast with Ricky Hampton of the African American Athlete and Derek Gervin. Let's go back to our guest line and see if we have Mr. Robertson on the other end. Alvin?
Wow.
I'm getting the number, but I'm not getting Alvin. But we'll keep trying, not a problem. We will catch up with him, and we'll get that conversation going.
Oh, hey, Ricky, I wanted to, you know, tell you, today is kind of a different show, and this is why I wanted Alvin on the show. A lot of times today you look at the game, and you look at all these little leagues, even the middle school, AAU basketball and all that, and a lot of guys that get all the credit are offensive players. And, you know, it's a breath of fresh air when you could, because the game is decided. I think championships are won defensively. And that's coming from a guy that's been an offensive player. So the reason I really wanted Alvin on here is so you could, you know, talking about going into the trenches, the things the kids have to learn about work ethic and things like that. And, you know, you get all the credit for being a scorer, but there's nothing like a guy that will go in the dark alley with you on a nightly basis. And that's the reason I really wanted him on here tonight. So I'm sure we'll get him on here. He got lost on us, but he will be back. He will show up, I'm sure.
Hey, and you know what, man? Alvin was a defensive stopper. I want to talk to him about his matchups with Michael Jordan. You know, Michael, in fact, let's go right to our guest line now because I think we have Alvin on. Alvin?
Yes, how you doing?
Hey, man, welcome to Derek Gervin's As Good As It Gets Basketball podcast. This is Ricky Hampton and, of course, the star of the show, the one and only Mr. Derek Gervin. How you doing tonight, brother?
I can't complain.
You doing okay, my man?
Yeah, I'm hanging in there. Can y'all hear me? Can y'all hear me okay?
Yes, we hear you fine.
Okay, I got on speakerphone. I didn't want to seem like I'm yelling in the phone.
You're good. Okay. Hey, Al, I want to welcome you onto the show, man. I hope you had a happy holiday.
Thank you, man. I hope y'all had the same good holiday as well.
Thank you.
I'm still eating.
We, We just got through bragging on you. Ricky knows about your career, but you know, I know you personally. I've been knowing you since the 1980s. So I'm going to let Ricky start off because I know he has some questions for you, and then I'll get to you after Ricky.
Okay, sounds
good. Hey, Alvin, I'm here in Detroit, Big Ten area, and you grew up not far from here in Ohio. How did you leave the Big Ten for Arkansas and the SEC, and were you looked at by Big Ten schools?
Well, you know, I got a look after junior college. We happened to have in the 80s, our high school team happened to win the Ohio High School tournament and was champions 3 years before I was a senior. So we had two guys off our high school team that went to Michigan, Marty and Mark Bodner, and then the other guard was Carter Scott. He went to Ohio State. And so I got an opportunity after my freshman year of junior college, and they were kind of recruiting me. But we had had some past experiences with Ohio State that didn't go over very well, and my dad was kind of mad with Ohio State. And that was because my oldest brother, he came out and he was the top running back, and he went to Ohio State behind Archie Griffin, and he never got to play, and that didn't sit well with my father, so he was kind of pissed off with – oh, excuse me. He was kind of messed off with Ohio State.
You're good.
You're all right, man. You let your feelings flow on this show, man.
Okay, I got you. That was a mistake.
So you went down to Arkansas, SEC, and turned it out. I mean, you guys started the basketball tradition at Arkansas because that was mostly a football school until you guys got down there.
Well, we happen to have an outstanding coach, and at that time it was the Southwestern Conference. And I was fortunate enough to play in the conference when Houston, Fife Slamma Jamma, was really headlining across the country. Outstanding team. And to be able to play against them several times in the season gave us a lot of exposure.
When you played, a lot of people don't know about Joe Klein, but I do. He went to become an All-American while you were playing. Did you go – part of you going to play, and you didn't mention the name of your coach, who I have to, Eddie Sutton, who's a legend.
Okay.
Did you go, like, to Arkansas, being a defensive player, you know, it's rare for a defender to have visions of playing in the NBA back at that time. You know, there are a few like the Walt Frazier's, but it wasn't something that, you know, it doesn't get you the limelight. When you went to Arkansas and played with Joe Klein and for Eddie Sutton, did you look at that as an opportunity for you to get more exposure for your career?
It was twofold. Joe Klein happened to come. He redshirted my first year as he had transferred from Notre Dame. But prior to that, we had a guard that was 6'6", 6'7", by the name of Tony Brown. We had Darrell Walker. We had Scott Hastings. And they had pretty much set the foundation. And before them, we had Sidney Moncrief, Ron Brewer, and Marvin Delph. But during that time when we played, we still had three guys or four guys that got drafted before I was a senior, and it was just an elevation. It was fun playing with Joe. I played also on the Olympic team with Joe and had a teammate on the Olympics. That was fun. And Joe was an outstanding teammate and an outstanding player as well.
That's right. You were on the 1984 Olympic team. Am I correct? Or was it 88?
Yeah, that's right. 84.
Wow. How was that playing for Coach Knight, Alvin?
Oh, my goodness. I could tell you some stories about Coach Knight and going through the Olympic trials. That was pretty fun and pretty exciting, but the practices were superb. You really learned and was taught the knowledge and the X and O's of the game. And it was a great experience to have the opportunity to play for Coach Knight.
You played on that team, and Ricky brought up the squad. Now, I have to go down, and these are some of the guys you had on your list. You played with Chris Mullin, who went on to have a stellar NBA career. You played with Joe Klein. You got Vern Fleming on that team that a lot of young people might not be familiar with.
Oh, yeah.
I'm naming top-notch ball players. Steve Albert, coach at UCLA right now. You got Sam Perkins, another gentleman, North Carolina Tar Heel. Patrick Ewing, Wayman Tisdale, You also play with Leon Wood, who's refereeing now, been refereeing about 15 years in the NBA. And then last but not least, you play with a guy by the name of Michael Jordan. What was the experience like every day practicing with those guys? Or did that send you to the next level mentally?
Well, it was fun because, for one, in coming in, I wasn't one of the recognizable guards. You know, years before that, they would always pick select teams that would travel across Europe and play. And you had premier All-Americans that was on the list every year, Michael Jordan, Sam Perkins, Wayman Tisdale, Patrick Ewing. And to be in a situation to where you're competing and practicing against these guys every day, you know, the Big East got a lot of recognition because they had outstanding teams. And you hear those names all the time. But when you get an opportunity to compete with them on a regular basis, and you see the different level of athleticism and skill, and you get to understand that, well, wow, you watch these guys and they get a lot of variety, and then you start to feel that you can compete on the same level as they can and then maybe even be better than them. And it's a heartwarming experience to have played for the United States Olympic team as well and represent the country without having to carry a gun.
Hey, man, you are a lockdown defender throughout your NBA career. Defensive Player of the Year, 1985-86. Defensive Player of the Year, six-time All-Defensive Team, three-time Steals Champ, four-time All-Star. And you know, Michael Jordan called you one of his most difficult matchups. And I know you were 6'3", you are 6'3", 6'4". I guess Mike 6'5", 6'6". What did you try to do with Mike to cause him problems, number one? And what was it about him that made him the player, iconic player he went on to become?
The thing is, I was fortunate enough to play and practice with him for early in the career. And the most enjoyable thing about it was that he did get a lot of recognition throughout our college days, and they recognized him as being, you know, going to be an outstanding player. To go and practice against him every day and to see the level of competing. And he's a very skilled and athletic player, and he has the will and the work ethics of a guy that's just an average guy. You know, he puts his work in. And he is extremely competitive at every level. He wants to win everything he does. If you're running line drills, he wants to come in first. If you're doing defensive deals or shooting drills, he wants to come in first. It's a competition at everything. If you want to shoot marbles, he feels he's got to win.
Alvin, that sounds like you, man.
Well, and getting the opportunity to play against him, in playing into the NBA, the one thing that people take for granted is that the biggest thing is learning to compete. And if you learn to compete and have that type of drive, a lot of times it puts you 50% above some of the average players. And I say that, Derek, when you and I had our conversations in San Antonio as well, and we were playing the summer league, and I would say, Derek, listen, man, you got the talent to play in the NBA. You gotta just focus on the other weaknesses. Play hard,
man.
Rebound, and play to your strength. Always play to your strength. Put the ball in the basket. That's what you were able to do. And once you focus on your craft, it became easy.
Alvin, I love you, man. I'm going to say this, and while we're on this subject, I'm about to get teary-eyed because I swear on my life, I did not think you would bring that up, man. And I'm so glad you did, because I just wanted people to know how you used to talk to me, and I used to listen to you. That's how much of an impact. Ricky, I played against this gentleman religiously in the summer leagues. And Al guarded me most of the time. And the stuff he's talking about right now, that touches my heart because, I talk about offense all the time. And, you know, we have these discussions on this show. We've never had a guy on here, Al, please tell me, where did you get your desire to want to compete at the highest level every single day? And you were different because you wanted to do it on the defensive end first. Please tell us, who gave you that? Was that just something that was inside of you, or where did you get that desire?
Well, I've always felt that in playing basketball, sometimes you may not be as talented as some of the other players. You might not be skilled as some of the players. But if you can recognize a player that can play defense at the end, a coach will always find a place for you, because at some point in time during a game, you're going to have somebody out there that's going to be able to try to stop a great and outstanding player. And if you can become that guy, you can always find a place on the team. Now, that's not to mention that I didn't continue to focus and work on the things that I wasn't as strong on, but that was an opportunity that I knew that I always had a chance to play. Because if you can defend, there's always a place for you. In any sport, if you can defend, there's always a place for you.
That's wow. True. That is so true, man. Hey, Alvin, you were the number seven overall pick coming out of college to San Antonio in 1984. A number seven pick, that's some big expectations. What were your expectations, and what surprised you or shocked you about making the transition from college basketball to the NBA? Or was
The first thing that you notice from college to NBA is that on a college or university team, if you get four or five guys on a team that makes it to the NBA in college, you know, during the time that you're there for your 4 years, that's a very good team. But when you get to the NBA, you watch some of these teams now, and you look at the 11th and the 12th guy and a 10th guy on the bench, and they get in the game, and you like to think that, oh, he's garbage, he can't play. Well,
right.
When you get to the league and you get established to have the name professional behind your name, everybody brings something skilled and talented to the game. But to get drafted, for one, it was a lifelong dream to try to play in the NBA. And then the team that I was drafted to, George Gervin Ice, was one of the superior scorers in the NBA. And he happened to be one of my childhood high school buddies' favorite player. And we called him Ice all through high school. So when I get drafted, he was the first one when I came home hugging me, and all he was talking about was, man, you're going to play with the Iceman. You're going to play with the Iceman. You know, and so, I mean, I would just see the Iceman periodically, but he knew every stat. He knew everything about him. So I was already prepared. But when I got to practice to see the finger roll, to see how easy scoring came for him, I said, wow. You know, and I said, Ice was so skilled that at some time it kind of hurt me, because he didn't have to set his man up. He didn't have to do the natural thing as an average basketball player would have to do to set himself up to score. Ice just did it any kind of way. So it was, you couldn't replicate anything from him, because he did nothing normal, nothing normal. So he would just tell me, dude, play. You know, he had problems. He had an early career with Scottie Fitzsimmons. And when I would come in the game, at times I would feel like Ice was mad at me, because Ice was, you know, the leader of the team. And when I would come in the game, I would feel like, well, if Ice is not happy, the players are mad at me. And during the timeout, he grabbed me and he pulled me to the side and he said, young fella, I had a problem. My issue was with him, talking about the coach. The next
right.
time you wide open, young fella, you don't shoot the ball, you and I going to have problems. So it encouraged me that don't take it personal for what I'm going through with the coach. You get out there and you play. And he said, because you're going to have your time in this league. You got some outstanding years ahead of you. And once he did
wow.
that and gave me the blessing, it really helped me to establish myself and start playing. Because when you come behind a legend as Ice was
right.
and you start getting minutes, it's a hard pill to follow, because I don't know if – you know, I come in, if the people are mad because I'm coming in in place of Ice, it was tough. But when he blessed me, it made it easier for me.
Wow. That is great, man.
You came to San Antonio, and it's funny because you replaced my brother, and it didn't, you know, it was a time for a change. Cotton Fitzsimmons was here at the time. But it's amazing now. You come out and you play. You go out and average. You get 301 steals. A 3.6 average steals in 1 year. For how could you keep that pace for it? And you played just about 82 games almost, I believe. Was that year that you really feel you belonged in the NBA overall? Not just talking about as a defender, but you had made your way, your mark in the NBA.
Well, after a while, when you start competing, you know, you have to learn a little bit, and the deal is the NBA is set up to where it's the scouting report as well. You play against some very skilled players and talented players, but you do get a report on certain players and their strong suits before every game, the plays that they're going to run. And if you do your homework before the game, you're prepped. And you hear the old cliche during the game sometimes, better offense, great defense, but better offense. Sometimes you're guarding a guy that's a superior scorer and he's just getting it done. And so as he's getting it done, you can give your best, and sometimes the guy's still going to light you up because some players have that night. But it's very warm when you can get to the point where you can play both ends of the court. So if a guy is scoring on you, you can go back at him and know you have the ability to score back on him. So that's when I felt that I had an advantage, because some of the time I would think that now that I can score, I can potentially stop some guards, and I didn't feel like some of the guards could stop me, because now I would be put in positions to where in a scouting report it made it a little bit conducive for me to score, as opposed to now to where, you know, when you're tough, they double team you, really take the balls out of your hands. And NBA is changing a little bit now. You know, we don't have the power forwards that we had back in the 80s. We had hand checking. So the game is a little different today than it was back when I first came into the league.
Yeah, and you know, and when you go back to that 85-86 season, I mean, you have 17 points a game, shot 51% from the field. In addition to your steals, you were averaging 6 assists a game. I mean, you were doing it at every level. And I think you were rebounding 6 or 7 boards a game. So that, I mean, man, that's a heck of a year, Alvin.
Well, I had nice numbers, but, you know, you look at the deal and it was okay, but it's easier when you're the third or the fourth option. You know, we had Mike Mitchell when I started to play regularly, when I was playing the two, who was a bona fide scorer, and we had Artis Gilmore, who was a bona fide scorer. So when you have those other talented players on the floor, now they're concentrating on stopping those guys. The double team is coming from those guys. And so it makes it a little easier for the third option or the fourth option to score. As I got in my career later, when David Robinson and Tim Duncan and these other guys were here in San Antonio, I would have loved to have the opportunity to play with them to where I continue to be the third or the fourth option, because it made it so much easier. As I started having success and getting traded to become the first option, I wasn't that great of an offensive player when the team started predicating their defense around stopping me. You know, I like being the third and fourth option. It's so much easier.
Yeah. Hey, tell us a little bit about Artis Gilmore. You know, when people talk about great centers, his name doesn't come up maybe as much as it should be. The Big A Train. Talk to us about him and what made him such a good player.
Well, I can tell you some stories, man. And so it used to be so funny, man, because the A-Train was probably not one of the most strongest people, not just players that you ever want to come into contact with. And just brute strength. And sometimes he didn't play with all of his strength, but he could dominate a game. But the thing that would always remind me of when we were playing, and, you know, this is back in the 80s now, the ball would come out. I grabbed the ball for the first time, and I'm playing, and all of a sudden I feel all this yuck all over the ball, all over my hand. I'm looking, whoa, like, what is this? And everybody started laughing. It's Artis. He had a whole bunch of stickum under his wrist, man. He put on his head between the ball. And I wasn't aware of that, like, the league, because we didn't have stickum in college. And I was like, man, what's going on? And they said, you know, and I said, no. And then Johnny came and told me, that's Artis, man. He put all this crap on the ball. I said, what are you doing for? It's stickum. And I said, why? And, you know, Johnny being outspoken, so he told me, man, because some of the time I'm hitting him right in the hands, Alvin, and he's not doing what he's supposed to do. I said, what? And I said, oh, man, you're wrong for that, Johnny. You're wrong for that. Artis is very talented, man. You're wrong for that.
Riggy brought up Artis. I want you – now, this is a guy that you just mentioned, Johnny. A lot of people don't know. You're talking about the 00, Johnny Moore. You two guys, I watched a lot of basketball. I've been around the game a long time. And there's been the only two guys I can really think of that would be comparable defensively would be Jerry Sloan and Norm Van Leer. What do you think? How was it playing with Johnny Moore? Because a lot of people and the young kids don't know I think if you wouldn't have left San Antonio and Johnny wouldn't have had his illness, I think you guys will go down in history as one of the best backcourts of all time. What do you think about that?
Well, we weren't really great outside shooters, but I mean, we make some shots. But the deal is, we competed well, and Johnny, I think he always was in the top three, top four in assists throughout his career, and we were having a great year and playing very well. And Johnny came down with a sickness, a rare disease, meningitis or something, and it took him out of the game a little early when he was really peaking and playing very well. And I think, as I said, these guys that I mentioned earlier in the broadcast, Ice, Mike Mitchell, Johnny Moore, Ron Brewer, he came on for a while from Arkansas. He was a great teaching factor for me. It was just other players there that when you come into the league, that welcome you and take the time to try to help you become a better player. And we don't see that now. I mean, in the summertime when we were here, we had summer leagues, the pro players would come out and the city would come and you played every Sunday and you got to mingle with the pros and the pros would help and volunteer their time. And it's now you very seldom get to see the pro players that are in the city and playing the summer league is non-existent now here in San Antonio.
Oh, Ricky, I want you to hear this part because when we played these games, I used to study Alvin. Al, why you were different when you coached? You had your own team and you coached your own team, and you basically had your young guys, your family members, and then you had some young guys that from around San Antonio playing with you. Most players were when I watched you in practice, you moved a lot without the ball, and a lot of people don't know that you moved a lot and you set a lot of screens. You set a lot of screens on the big men off the ball. Why didn't you think of becoming a coach? Because I watched you. It was a different type of ball that you were teaching, but you were teaching the fundamentals of defense. You ever think about coaching?
Man, you mentioned that. So this was the deal, and nobody but a few people know this, and it's never been spoken of again. When my last year or my second year, first year in Toronto, and we're going through the season, we ended the season, and they fired the head coach. And when fired the head coach, I was a free agent. And I was going to get a three-year deal from Toronto Raptors with Isaiah. And Isaiah came to me and asked me if I was ready to coach. And I told Isaiah, I said, "Are you serious?" He said, "Yeah, man." He said, you can do this, Alvin." And I looked at him and I said, "Isaiah, I want to play three more years." And he said, "You do?" I said, "Yeah, I want to play three more years." And he hired Dale Walker. He hired Dale Walker, who was my teammate. And after Dale Walker left, Butch Carter got the job. And Butch Carter and I was talking, and I thought he was going to bring me on in Toronto. And unfortunately, he had an incident to where he said something about Bobby Knight, and he got released. And that was pretty much my last opportunity because I started having problems off the court, and there was no returning after that.
Wow.
Well,
go ahead, Rick.
Hey, you talk about guys playing your summer league and everything. Did you ever run across guys, Alvin, that just had tremendous talent and just wasn't able to translate that talent into college scholarships or maybe opportunities on the professional levels? You know, here in Detroit, Derek and I have talked about guys that just had all kind of talent but just couldn't make it happen in terms of their careers.
I'm sorry, Derek. Can you repeat the question again? I'm sorry.
No problem, man. I was just saying, did you ever run across guys that you would play with in the summer leagues or growing up that just had all kind of talent and a lot of potential but were never able to realize it for one reason or another? Some of the better bass players you may have played against?
I played against several players in that magnitude that I felt would should have had an opportunity, and for whatever reason it didn't happen at the time. And now with that happening, the NBA they scout, they got so many people out there that if you can play, they'll find you. You can play them fine. Whether you're in Europe, you're in, you see guys coming into the league. We had a guy here in San Antonio a couple of years ago by the name of Simmons. And, man, he's one of the most athletic players, and, I mean, made plays. And he got into the league late. But he played so well coming off the bench for the Spurs that some other team signed him to a 3 or 4 year guaranteed contract. And, you know, you like to see success stories like that, like people that just don't give up. I'm hoping that that could be my son's that I have. They're over in Europe. He was cut by Golden State Warriors when he got drafted. He just bad timing. He played at the University of Oregon, Elgin Cook. And right when he got drafted there, they traded for Kevin Durant. And, you know, so there's just not enough room with the great players that they have on Golden State Warriors.
Hey, wow. Hey, Alvin, how would you – and first of all, I want to take you back to the problems you would give MJ. What was it you would try to do with him? Did you make him try to go to his weak hand, or did you just get after him the way he tried to get after everybody else?
It's a combination. The deal is everybody was coming to see the show when Michael Jordan came to town. And for one, you really was trying to hope that you didn't embarrass yourself or get embarrassed for the first thing, so you had to do everything you can. But when you played him, he was such a talent, and he's still going to score his points. And you had help. You know, you couldn't really contain him one-on-one. And so, you know, there's certain things when you run the plays. You try to trap him, get the ball out of his hands, you know, box him out, make sure he don't get an easy basket, and hope you don't turn the ball away. He electrifies the crowd and gets those dunks. And that kind of gets him going. But the main thing is just competing. You know, the deal is we just play hard on every possession, and sometimes just the hustle plays can turn a game around, just always continue to compete. And so I started going to the model, my deal is in going to the game, was that I didn't want anybody to outwork me while I was playing. So I wanted when people came to the game that they could see that I was, you know, I'm going to give you 100%, I'm going to play hard every night.
You're listening to Derek Gervin's As Good As It Gets Basketball podcast with Ricky Hansen, Derek Gervin, and our special guest, Alvin Robinson, former NBA Defensive Player of the Year, four-time All-Star, three-time Steel Champ, six-time All-Defensive Team. You were the most improved player the year you won the Defensive Player of the Year, Alvin. I mean, you certainly had a stellar career in the National Basketball Association. And what we like to do on Derek's show is just try to educate some of our younger people about some of the past legends like yourself, man. So many great players, you know, seem to be forgotten in today's game. And that's why we're so excited to have you on tonight.
Hey, I really appreciate you guys having me on the show. Derek, thanks so much for reaching out, man, and touching base with me and inviting me. I appreciate it. And as I said to you, I have several friends, Derek, that we talked about. If you want other guys, I got some guys for you, man. Just call me. I'll forward them on to you, man, and I hope all the best for you guys on your upcoming shows in the future. Thanks for having
me. Thank you. Hey, I want to ask you a question before you get off. First of all, I appreciate that. I told some people about Ricky Pierce and Dale Ellis, two other great players that we'll have on the show. But I wanted you to, before you get off, you didn't tell, but you played a very physical game. And, you know, it's rare that you have that combination for a guy 6'4". So every day you played physical. You used your brain a lot on the defense. But I need you to tell these kids before you get off, please, because I talk about behavior. And I've watched you play for over 30 years. You very rare get upset on the basketball court. I might have saw you a couple times where you might have had a little situation. I know one time for sure you had a situation with Shaquille O'Neal. But and that, overall, your behavior. Look at Rick. No, you had he went you Shaquille. You had things. You used to wrestle. You brought Artis Gilmore down a few times, and I'm saying that on the radio because I know how physical you really are, and a lot of people didn't know that part. But tell them how you're on the serious side about behavior, Al, how important it is for these young people coming up to be a part of a team.
In playing, they call fouls or whatever, you try not to show emotions. You try to show good sportsmanship at all times. And the deal is you play hard. There's always somebody watching. And I think that's instilled from my mother, father, that when you're playing, I'm talking to a friend today, and he's younger than me. He's watching basketball. He saw some highlights, and he turned around and told me, "You didn't get any recognition because you wasn't fancy enough. You didn't do all good." And I said, "Well, I always like to try to fit in on the court and not stand out." And in doing those things, you know, you don't have to talk about yourself. You play the game and let other people talk about you. And so that's the thing that I try to pass on to my players. You don't have to go out there and do all kind of crazy things and try to make the attention and focal point on you as an individual. If you continue to play hard and play the right way, let people talk about what you've done as opposed to you trying to sell yourself. And that makes a lot of the difference when you play.
That's $10 million of advice, Al. Man, thank you.
It really is, man. Al, one more before you go. When you watch basketball today, do you ever envision how your game would fit in? And do you like today's version of the NBA?
I enjoy basketball, period. I love basketball. So I enjoy watching basketball. And the changes have been welcome. I think that sometimes I would still like to see a little bit more touching and a little bit more touching in the paint. When guys are cutting through and getting free lanes, I just kind of like to see guys get slowed down a little bit because, you know, it's wide open. You can't touch anybody. You can't do anything. And it allows for a lot of points. But sometimes, you know, I don't necessarily say that that's great basketball, but it's fun basketball to watch. And so I think as for entertainment, the changes have been good for the game. And so as long as the game evolves and continues to have excitement and keep the fan support, I'm all for it. I just like basketball. I love the sport, man. I really do.
Al, when you're sitting at home, and I'm going to let you get off, when you're sitting at home having your conversations, because I know how people talk when they're watching the games on television, two guys in particular, NBA, that I would pay, and I'm not going to pay to see many people. You tell me individually, each guy, how would you guard the first one, Steph Curry, and then tell me about Russell Westbrook, the first one, Steph Curry.
Now, Russell Westbrook, okay, first one, Steph Curry. Steph Curry, it will be a tough guard because he handles the ball very well, and he's got a very quick trigger, and he can shoot it off the bounce, and he can shoot it with no dribble. So he's always a threat because, you know, in our days, when we played back, you know, the scouting report, some guys, they could shoot off the dribble. Some guys were catch and shoot guys. He's very creative. He's got quickness. So my strong point would be, I can't say you force him left and make him play to his weak hand because he goes well to the left. I say you force him left with the guy shadowing him to the side to try to shadow him. Because if I'm playing him on the right side and I'm forcing him left, I still have an opportunity to contest his jump shot if he pulls up, and I'm forcing him to a help side. So that would be the way I would try to guard him. Now, if I'm guarding Russell Westbrook, I would play him straight up, very physical, because he's a physical player. He attacks the basket like you've never seen, man. And so I would try to force him to shoot the ball from the outside and definitely not let him get any hustle or second rebound basket. Always don't give the guy second opportunities, rebound, and easy basket, because once he gets those things, it just lights him up, and anything can happen then. But he's my favorite player to watch in the NBA, Russell Westbrook, because I just love how hard he plays.
Wow. Alvin, we got one more for you. I got a text message here. Alvin, what are your standout moments from other players individually that mean a lot to you?
Standout moments individually. Well, I can tell you of players that probably don't get mentioned anymore because, as I said, we're in a different era of NBA that I enjoyed playing against, competing against, that were fun players on the court. That was nice. You go back to the who I say. The Greyhound, right? He was an outstanding player. Walter D, could put it in the basket. You know, he could really play, and I enjoyed competing against him. Guy that they probably don't speak about was Mike Wilson. Mike Woodson was a very talented offensive basketball player. Another one was small forward Eddie Johnson. I think the majority of his years with Phoenix and Seattle. Very good scorer. Tom Chambers. I really love Tom Chambers' game. You know, at that time, you know, you had white players that was in the league. You'd be surprised at the athletic ability that they would have because, you know, it's just crazy. And he was one of those guys to be like 6'10", 6'11", and can really jump and shoot and handle the basketball. He was a fun player to watch as well.
Yes. Great names, man. Great names. Alvin, we really appreciate it, brother.
Thanks for having me, man. I really enjoyed the show. And as I said to you, man, dude, y'all need to give me some updates. I didn't know when can I tune in? How can I tune in to listen to the show? I don't know.
I'll get you the call or anything.
Y'all update me.
I'll get you the information. I'll get you everything, sir, because I want you on again. We didn't cover half the stuff, so I'll make sure I get you the information. And we want to thank you again, Al.
Say, man, y'all did a great job, man. Y'all keep up the work, and I'm looking forward to hearing other players on the show, man. Thanks for having me, and I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Have a good night,
sir.
Man.
All right,
to our listeners.
You're on point, man. I appreciate you, dude.
Thank you, Al. I love you, man.
All right, y'all be good. Thanks for having me. Have a good weekend.
You too.
Okay. And to our listeners out there, you can get all of Derek Gervin's podcasts by going to theAfricanAmericanAthlete.com and go to the audio listings, and you'll see podcasts from Derek, his As Good As It Gets basketball podcast, as well as other podcasts. That's theAfricanAmericanAthlete.com. And check us out on our Facebook page. The African American Athlete Facebook page. Man, that guy has just a tremendous legacy in the National Basketball Association.
I wanted all the coaches and kids and the parents to hear the other side of the court, because we focus so much on one side, on the skill sets. And with Alvin, you work on he was more about using the brain and just being a tough guy.
Yes.
I didn't know a lot of people that outworked him. So, you know, he talked about Michael Jordan's work ethic, but he's never been a guy to toot his own horn. And I'm telling you firsthand, this guy's workout was crazy. So
yeah.
He worked hard. He earned his way into that 11-year career. And it was a great show tonight. I'm happy.
And you could tell when you heard Alvin talking about the way he defended guys, how he talked about making them go right or left, or playing them on one side or other. You can tell he prepared for the guys he was going up against. And back then, it was a lot harder to prepare for teams than it is today because of the technology. You know, you got on the sidelines of games now, NBA games, you got guys watching plays run on touch screens. So
yeah.
It's really no excuse nowadays for guys not to be prepared to play.
If you want to be, you got to be ahead of the competition. Well, now you know, when I talk about how I scored a little bit, now you know why. Because if I play against Alvin, after playing against him for the whole year, everything else was easy.
Yeah.
And I mean that. Oh, man, I'm guarding, I'm 6'8", so putting the ball on the floor, I felt like he was a wizard when you put that ball on the floor. And so I had to be very careful. It taught me to see the floor, to watch the entire floor, and learn where the help was coming from. So he impacted my career in a big way. So just
so,
like
so
you
when,
doing yourself.
When you had a guy like Alvin who was very active defensively, you know, very physical, but you had some size on him, would you try to take him into the post area? I mean, what would you try to do to counteract some of the things he was trying to do to you?
Well, I played, I like to shoot over guys as well. But sometimes, you know, Alvin, it was tough because he's going to play you tough on the perimeter. He was good with the hand check, and, you know, you can put the forearm on as well. So your best advantage was to try to take him down low. But me, remember, I was still trying to get better as well, so I didn't just want to play one kind of way. I tried to be flexible.
Yeah.
I was also, I took the summer league as a way to work on my skills. So I drew, you know, I played on the perimeter against him as well. I figured the more things you can do, the more valuable you are. So playing against him was like a perfect practice for me. It's the best practice I've ever had.
And you know one thing he said tonight? If you want to make a team, be sure you on a team. Play some defense. Guard some people. You will always have a spot on a roster. You know, I saw that tonight in the Pistons game against Houston. The Pistons went to their bench and brought in this kid, Bruce Bowen, a rookie from Miami, about 6'5", very athletic and very strong, and put him on Harden, James Harden. And he actually stole the ball from Harden two times going down the stretch. I'm sure Harden wasn't very familiar with him and thought he'd be able to just have his way. But, you know, a guy who has some of, speaking of defensive guys, Derek, a guy who has some of Alvin's tenacity is P.J. Tucker with the Houston Rockets.
Houston and Patrick Beverley, another former Rocket.
Yeah. I mean,
those two guys will not back down. I didn't bring up Patrick Beverley because he reminded me of Alvin a lot as well. Alvin was a better off the ball defender as far as getting those steals when you put the ball down, but the same tenacity. You know, Patrick Beverley doesn't care what size you are. PJ Tucker doesn't care what size you are. So guys like that, every coach wants because your shot is not going to always be on. But every night your effort can be there. And when a guy gives effort every night, those are the guys you want to go into the trenches with. And, you know, so a lot of people don't give them respect. But I respect defenders because it's something that not everyone wants to do.
Derek, I just got a text. Kenny Robertson was a big fan of yours. He played at Cleveland State. And was a big admirer of the things you did on the basketball court. So shout out to Kenny for giving the shout out to
that's Alvin's brother, Ricky. That's Alvin's that's one of Alvin's younger brothers. It's funny because I don't even know how to explain it. He has two guys that are his favorites. I'm one of them, and the other one is a guy they call by name of AI, Allen Iverson.
Yeah, that's good company to be in.
Well, this guy loves me to death, and I love him as well. Well, you know, when we played in Cleveland, I made sure he had tickets. So, you know, people appreciate things when you go out of your way for people. And I wanted to thank Kenny. Reach Kenny, I love you, man.
Absolutely. I tell you, I really enjoyed talking to Alvin tonight and getting his take on the NBA and taking a look back at his, 11 years in the National Basketball Association. That's really putting in work, especially at the guard position, and especially the way he played. He was never a big scorer, but he, like you said, you guard people, you make plays on the defensive end, you're going to have a spot on a roster. Well, man, we only got a couple of more minutes, D. Anything else on your mind you want to try to touch on before we get out of here?
Yeah, I'm trying to right now. I'm kind of excited. I'm looking at Jimmy Butler as actually won a couple games for Philadelphia. So that excites me to see another team that might be in the mix. I was kind of worried about Philly. But if things continue to go well with this new squad, with the addition of Jimmy Butler, that's one more team that we have to worry about come playoff time. So I'm excited about that because the more teams we have, the better it is.
Yeah, and you know, go a little more to the East. All our listeners may not have heard what you were talking about when you came on. You said you're surprised at the quality of play you're seeing in the Eastern Division. You know, the West gets all the love. That's where LeBron is now and, of course, the Warriors.
The West has been struggling. If you look at it, no team has been consistent except for even Golden State hasn't been consistent. So I take that back. The Lakers have won 8 out of their last 10, But if you look at all the other teams, Oklahoma City, the Spurs are like number 13, 11 to 12 spot. So that's how difficult it's going to be this year to make the playoffs. I'm looking at it might take 50 games to get into the playoffs. So that's definitely something that's worth watching.
Yeah, yeah. And on the East, you got Toronto at 16-4, Milwaukee 13-4, Philly 13-8, Indianapolis 11-8, Detroit 9-7, Boston 10-9.
10-9 Celtics.
Charlotte's playing well, 9-9. Kemba Walker has been just tremendous. I saw him get 58 the other night in a losing effort.
60.
That's right. He did get two more. He got 60. And actually, they should have won that ball game. Orlando's playing 500 ball. And you can't sleep on Brooklyn. I think the biggest disappointment to me has been the play of the Washington Wizards. I mean, even when they won a game, came back and won a game the other night, and the story after the game was how everybody was still mad.
Did you know that Wall and Bill aren't really the best of friends?
Wow.
They've had some friction. It's been covered up a lot. But if you look at it, they had an addition. Carmelo gets a bad rap. How about the guy Washington added? They added Dwight Howard.
We just had this conversation. We got about 2 minutes to go. But we had the conversation. Do you have to like your teammate? We had that conversation last week talking about Draymond and KD.
You have to respect each other, Ricky.
Okay.
But you have to respect each other. You don't have to love each other. Hey, Ricky, if you and I didn't get along, say, okay, we can be in front of people. But you can feel the tension when the guys have a little friction between themselves. It's a certain way you respond when your teammate of yours does something good. You can tell something that's not scripted as to something, you know, when you're really celebrating for guys, you can tell the difference as opposed to something that just looks rehearsed. And, guys pick up on that in the locker room. I think you must get along. You don't have to like each other, but you have to respect each other for the betterment of the team. And I really believe that's true.
Yeah. And you talk – a good example of that was a conversation we had with Dwayne Casey and the way his players react to him. And the way that team is playing for him. They are competing on a regular basis. Andre Drummond has never played with the energy he has shown so far this season. So, yeah, but, we could see some movement in D.C. with that roster, already 6-12. I wouldn't be surprised to see some guys get traded there. Go ahead. You
were going to
say something.
No, I'm agreeing with you. No, I said it. I was disagreeing with you. I agree 100%.
Yeah, and the team with the worst record in the NBA right now,
Cleveland, Phoenix,
and Atlanta all just had 3 wins. And you think about where Cleveland was just 1 year ago contending for an NBA title. And now they are what they are. When LeBron left the first time, they became a lottery team, and this is what they're going to be.
Breaks my heart, right? Because
I talk about this guy,
but his impact is that big. He leaves his team, and they go from the top to the bottom. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Well, it's not even unbelievable.
The same thing with L.A. I mean, he goes to L.A. now. They are contending for a playoff spot. But, Dean, we got to get out of here, man.
All right, Ricky. Well, I want to thank the listeners, first of all, and, I want to thank you. That's been a great show.
Sir.
It's been fantastic, and I can't wait to do it again soon.
Yeah, we have a packed house tonight, and, again, check us out. You can find Derek's As Good As It Gets podcast on the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com website, and not only can you find Derek's podcast, but you can find a lot of stories that are celebrating the accomplishment of black athletes in and out of the athletic arena. But, D, we got to get out of here, man.
All right, Ricky, let me say this right. Let me say this real quick.
Yes,
Monday, we're doing this. Monday, we're back on the air. The guest will be Don Casey, former Los Angeles Clipper coach. Don Casey. So we'll be doing it again Monday. And everyone have a fantastic night, please.
Yes, sir. Good night. God bless.
All right, have a good, take care, Ricky. Have a good night.